Here is a question. You are planning a cross-country, you pull up your sectional chart, and right across your intended route, there is a blue-hatched region with the designation R-4700 and a small altitude block. Do you know what to do? Do you know how to find out if it is active? Do you know what happens if you cross it without authorization? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, right here on Radio Hangar. Today, we are going deep on special use airspace, not the watered-down overview where someone in ground school waved at the chart and said, just avoid the blue stuff, the real version. The one that explains why this airspace exists, what the actual consequences are for getting it wrong, and how to make smart decisions before and during every cross-country you fly. Here's the thing. Special use airspace shows up on the airman certification standards. Your examiner will ask about it, but more importantly, it is sitting on the chart of every cross-country route you will plan for the rest of your flying life. Getting it wrong ranges from a phone call you never want to receive to an armed intercept you absolutely do not want to experience. Before we get into it, shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There is a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they have you covered. It is a genuine way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com, all right? The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, designates six types of special use airspace in the United States. Six, not three, not four, six, and the checkride expects you to name all of them and understand the real-world difference between them. Let's walk through this together, starting from the most restrictive and working our way down. First type, prohibited areas. The name tells you everything. Prohibited, there is no authorization process available to a civilian pilot that results in a yes. These areas protect national security and welfare at the highest level, and that designation is not flexible. On your sectional chart, you will see them labeled with the letter P followed by a number. P-47, P-49. The most well-known prohibited area in the country sits over Camp David in Maryland. That is P-49, 1 nautical mile radius, do not enter. There is no frequency to call. There is no waiver to apply for. The answer is no before the question is asked. What happens if you enter one? At minimum, law enforcement response and a certificate action from the FAA. At maximum, a military intercept from an armed fighter. This is not hypothetical. There have been real events where light aircraft wandering into prohibited airspace were intercepted by armed military jets. The cockpit signal from an intercepting fighter is a wing waggle followed by a rocking motion directing you to follow. That is a very bad day you want no part of. Second type, restricted areas. This is where it gets more nuanced and where a lot of pilots get confused because restricted sounds similar to prohibited, but the rules are meaningfully different. A restricted area contains activity that is hazardous to non-participating aircraft, artillery firing, aerial gunnery, weapons testing, unusual flight maneuvers. You will see them on the sectional with the letter R and a number, R-2314, R-4700. The key distinction is that restricted areas can be authorized for civilian transit. When a restricted area is hot, meaning actively in use, you need authorization from the controlling agency to enter it. When it is cold, meaning not in use, you may fly through it, sometimes without any coordination at all. So how do you find out whether it is hot or cold? Here is something I wish someone had told me early in my training. Every restricted area has a controlling agency listed in the chart supplement, which most of us still call the Airport Facility Directory. You look up the restricted area by its designation number and you will find the controlling agency, usually a branch of the military, along with the scheduled times of use. If it says continuous, treat it as hot until you confirm otherwise. If it has scheduled hours, cross-reference your flight time with those hours. You can call the controlling agency directly using the contact information in the chart supplement. You can also get status through Leidos Flight Service by calling 1-800-992-7433 or by logging into 1-800-WXBrief.com for a full standard briefing that includes any active restricted area information along your route. For Flight and Garmin Pilot will show you the charted altitude limits and schedule for these areas, but they are showing you charted data, not real-time activation. For real-time status, especially on the day of your flight, you want a live source. The practical rule is simple. If you're not sure whether a restricted area is active, either route around it or get confirmation before you fly through it. That call takes 2 minutes. An FAA certificate action takes months. Third type, warning areas. Designated with the letter W and a number, warning 158, warning 451. These begin at 3 nautical miles from the coastline of the United States and extend outward over international waters. Because they are over international waters, the FAA cannot legally prohibit civilian flight. So instead of prohibiting, they warn. Warning areas contain the same types of hazardous activity as restricted areas: weapons testing, military flight training, high-performance maneuvering. You are not prohibited from flying through one as a civilian, but you are flying into airspace that the federal government felt was dangerous enough to put on the chart with specific notation. If you route through a warning area, at minimum get flight following from ATC and let someone know where you are. Fourth type, this is where a lot of student pilots first encounter what I would call the nuanced side of special use airspace. Military operations areas, or MOAs. These are some of the most common pieces of special use airspace that general aviation pilots will actually interact with, especially in the western states and the southeastern United States where military training is concentrated. An MOA is airspace where military flight training occurs, high-performance maneuvers, simulated air combat, formation flying, tactical approaches at speeds that a Cessna 172 pilot would find difficult to even imagine. The critical difference from a restricted area is that civilian aircraft are not prohibited from entering an active MOA. You can fly through an active MOA as a visual flight rules pilot without a clearance, but let's talk about whether you should. Think about what is actually happening inside an active MOA: fighter jets operating at high speeds, potentially maneuvering through multiple altitude layers simultaneously, doing things that are predictable only to the aircrew doing them and the instructor who designed the mission. You are a training aircraft, or a light single, at cruise altitude. You are not easy to pick up visually from a fast mover running an intercept profile. The closure rate alone changes the collision geometry in ways that are genuinely dangerous. The smart move when you encounter an active MOA on your planned route is to contact the controlling ATC facility. The controlling frequency for each MOA is printed right on the sectional near the MOA boundary. Call that facility and ask for flight following through the MOA. The radar controller can see you, and in many cases can coordinate with military scheduling to give you the best routing, or at minimum ensure that someone in that airspace environment knows you are there. If you are flying under an instrument flight rules flight plan, ATC handles the coordination automatically. They will route you through or around the MOA based on their coordination with the controlling military authority. As a visual flight rules pilot, that coordination does not happen unless you initiate it. You have to be proactive. You can also check MOA activity during pre-flight. A standard brief from flight service will include MOA scheduling information for your route. Ask specifically about any MOAs along the way and whether they are scheduled to be active during your flight window. Many MOAs operate on predictable weekday schedules tied to military training rotations. One thing that trips up students on the practical test is the altitude dimension of special use airspace. A restricted area, or MOA, does not necessarily go from the surface to unlimited. Read the altitude notation carefully. You might see a floor at 5,000 feet and a ceiling at flight level 180. If you are at 2,500 feet, you are legal to fly beneath that airspace without any coordination at all. Your routing options include going underneath the floor laterally when the geometry of the airspace allows it. That is sometimes faster than going around the boundary. Fifth type, alert areas. Designated with the letter A and a number, alert areas indicate high volumes of pilot training or unusual aerial activity, not military civilian flight training academies, skydiving drop zones, areas with high concentrations of instructional flights. There is no prohibition on flying through an alert area, but all pilots, including the ones conducting the training activity inside, share equal responsibility for collision avoidance. When I route through an alert area, I tighten my traffic scan, slow my scan rate down and make it more methodical, and sometimes broadcast on the common traffic advisory frequency if there is one associated with the area. Inside an alert area, you may encounter aircraft flying slowly, doing unusual maneuvers, recovering from simulated emergencies, or simply showing up from unexpected directions. Awareness is your tool here. Sixth and final type, controlled firing areas. These are actually elegant in their logic. A controlled firing area suspends all activity when a non-participating aircraft approaches. The operators use spotters or radar monitoring, and when you show up, they stop. Because the airspace self-terminates around you, there is no need to chart it. It will not appear on your sectional. You will not find it in a briefing. It simply is not a factor for flight planning purposes because the hazard disappears when you arrive. Those are your six. prohibited, restricted, warning, military operations area, alert, and controlled firing area. Know all six. Know which ones allow civilian entry and which ones do not. Know how to check activation status for the ones that change based on military scheduling. Now let's add one more layer because the examiner almost certainly will. Temporary flight restrictions. These are different from permanent special use airspace. A temporary flight restriction issued under Federal Aviation Regulations Part 91, Sections 137 through 145, is not charted on a sectional. You will not see it in your navigation software unless your app is pulling live Notice to Air Missions data. TFR is live in the Notice to Air Missions system. They appear in your pre-flight briefing. Common TFRs include presidential movement areas, which create a no-fly bubble around the president's location and Air Force One. Wildfire TFRs, which protect aerial firefighting operations from sightseers who have no business in the area and create serious safety hazards for tanker pilots. Disaster area TFRs in the aftermath of hurricanes or other major events. Sporting event TFRs over major stadiums on game days, which cover a 3-nautical-mile radius and extend up to 3,000 feet above the surface. TFRs account for a significant portion of airspace violations in general aviation, and they are entirely preventable. The cause is almost always the same. A pilot who skipped the notice to air missions check during pre-flight, presidential TFR violations in particular result in immediate intercept response, certificate suspension, and in some cases criminal referral depending on the specific circumstances. The habit is simple. Every pre-flight brief, every flight you check notices to air missions. Use the briefing line, use your app with live data enabled. Do not skip this step because you flew the same route last week and nothing was there. A TFR can go active in hours. The Airman Certification Standards want you to demonstrate several things when it comes to special use airspace. You should be able to look at a sectional, identify the type of airspace by its designation and chart symbology, explain the rules that apply to each type, describe how you would determine whether a given area is active on the day of a flight, and explain your routing decision. If you route around it, say why. If you route through it with flight following, explain how you would initiate that contact. If you fly under the floor of an MOA, show that you have checked the altitude limits and your planned altitude is below the floor. Here is something else worth saying, because I think it reflects how a genuinely safe pilot thinks about this. The fact that you are legally permitted to fly through an active MOA does not automatically make it a good decision. Legal and safe are not always the same thing. A lot of the judgment calls in aviation live in that gap. You have the authority to make the call. Use that authority thoughtfully. Most of what we covered today comes directly from the Aeronautical Information Manual Chapter 3, and the relevant regulations are in Title 14 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Part 73. The FAA Safety Team at faasafety.gov has free resources on airspace violations and the decision-making that prevents them, worth bookmarking. More training talk at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern Blue Skies, and I'll see you next time.